You are listening to Georgia on Drive. It has just gone four, and that means, of course, it is time to go to the interview I recorded a couple of days ago via Zoom with the wonderful Steve Kipner. I am so excited about my guest today. Steve Kipner might not be a name you have heard, but you will definitely have heard his songs from the big hits of Camila Cabello, The Script, Cheryl Cole, Natasha Bedingfield, Christina Aguilera, Chicago. The list goes on and on, starting with a song by Olivia Newton-John. Physical was recorded 40 years ago this month. He is Grammy-nominated Ivor Novello winner, and on the phone all the way from LA with me today, it is Steve Kipner. Hi, Steve, how are you?
Hey, lovely. I'm good. Thank you very much.
How's everything out there? It's much sunnier there than it is here at the moment.
It's a really nice sunny day.
I'm very, very jealous. You, of course, were one of the masterminds behind Physical. That was recorded by Olivia Newton-John 40 years ago this month.
I can't believe it. 40 years ago. That's freaking me out.
What I want to know from you first is, how did that song come about? Like, how did you become involved in that process?
All I did and all I've ever done most of my life is just write songs. And so I got together with a guy called Terry Shattuck, who is an English guy. And we were sitting around one day and we thought, I'm a bit bored of writing these sort of love songs. You know, we thought, just, you know, I love you, everything's going to be, let's just write a song about the physical side of things. And we just started, literally just, we wanted to write a song that wasn't about falling in love and the typical thing. So it was just to try and do something different. And it just sort of came about. It wasn't planned. It was just literally because we were bored of writing the other typical songs.
And so when you wrote that, was it always intended for Olivia, or was it just a song you wrote?
No, never. Well, I used to sing all the demos, and because I sang it, I imagined that a guy would sing it. It never occurred to me that it would work for a female. It was never intended for anyone, but in my mind, it was going to be someone like Rod Stewart or somebody like that. And it happened that one of my best friends, a guy called Roger Davies, who was also kind of looking after me as a manager, just trying to help me get little things going. I didn't have that much on the go at that point. I went up to his office to play him the cassette of the finished demo. And in the other office was a guy called Lee Kramer, who's another English guy who was Olivia's boyfriend and manager at that time. And so he heard it through the walls. So he came in and said, "What's that song?" And he said, "Well, Olivia's coming in 20 minutes." And I'd known Olivia, by the way, since I was 17 in Australia, because we're both Australian, because I was in a band when I was a kid, 15, 16. And she was just a young singer at that point. But I had never thought about having her sing one of my songs, because really at that point I'd been an artist and I'd sung a lot of my own records and I'd never really thought about that many people singing my songs.
Hmm.
And she came in anyway, 20 minutes after I'd been there, and they got her to record it, but she wasn't excited about what the lyric was about. It seems very tame now, but in those days, it was pretty controversial. But she recorded it and then was worried about it.
Right.
And then she thought, this is getting a bit risque. And so that was the first time she said, I'll do a video and make it about exercise and people will think it's about that. It was the first time a video was released before a single came out.
Really? Amazing. Yeah, I was going to ask you about, you know, how that song was released, the political circumstances at the time. It was definitely a quite an explosive song, especially given Olivia's squeaky clean record and everything. That's fascinating.
Another good thing that happened was it was banned in South Africa and other places, some places in America, Utah and other places. And because it was banned, I guess a lot of people thought, well, hey, I need to listen to this song that's banned to see what it is I'm missing.
Yeah.
And that really helped propel it.
Yeah, sometimes that definitely helps.
Yeah.
So as you've already said, Olivia needed a bit of persuading to do it, but I'm sure she didn't regret it after, because absolutely exploded. And the ironic thing is now today we've got songs like WAP on the radio, really, really much more extreme.
Yeah.
I'd love to know your opinion as someone who has watched the music industry develop. What's your take on, you know, the various ways the industry has changed, particularly in that sense?
Well, in life, everything changes all the time. What my parents liked was different from what I liked, and what my kids like is different from what I like. It changes. You can only really say what it is at the time. Mm. I mean, that song now, Physical, is such a tame song. Mm-hmm. That seems, you know, a long time ago, which is it is, as you said, 40 years ago. Oh my God.
Absolutely. 40 years ago. It's amazing. I mean, there's so many things that must have changed over your career. You've written some massive things in the past. Obviously, Genie in a Bottle, probably like 20 years ago or so, and then way more recent stuff, The Script. What other things have changed over your career? It was really what I wanted to ask.
Well, I never think like that. Things have changed, obviously, but I've just always tried to be in the moment and do whatever I was doing the best I could.
Right, okay.
And then things happen to change around you, but it didn't feel like it changed that much for me. I just kept doing what I did. I tried to not be influenced by what was on the radio, because then if I would have copied something, or copied a style, by the time it comes out, it's already old-fashioned. So I found out that the best way for me to go about things was just to do what I liked, whether it was commercial or not. And sometimes those songs became hit songs because I wasn't trying to be like anything else. So it sounded new. So if people liked it, it was something relatively new. So I've made a career, really, of just doing what I want to do and trying not to be influenced by too many other things. Oh, you know, I was influenced by people I really loved in the business, and that was, I was a real fan of so many people, but not trying to copy them too much.
Yeah, that's really good advice for anyone, you know, sort of going into the industry themselves. Don't try and be something that you're not. Just do what you love, and people will love it for you sort of being authentic.
It's very important, because if you become really good at copying somebody else, you're already, the best you can be is the second one of those people. Mm. The only way you can sort of be in the lead is to do something that you do that no one else is doing.
Yeah, so maybe the method, your approach to how you write and stuff hasn't changed. Do you think dynamics between various producers, writers, artists, do you think dynamics have changed between people in the industry at all?
Oh, definitely. In those days, you would write a song and then you would have to do a demo of it. And then the demo would you give it to a producer originally. And then the producer could do sort of his version of it. And sometimes you'd be disappointed and sometimes you'd be happy. That was the reason I got into producing, because with computers and things like that, I could actually get this song that I'd written now started to sound like a hit little demo.
Mm.
And then if the record company heard it, it already sort of sounded like a hit, or it didn't. They'd say, I like that, or I don't. And if they did it, there's no real reason to change the idea too much, you know, the way it was produced. So I ended up just saying, okay, this is sort of how it's going to be. And I just reproduce the way that I'd heard it originally for the demo.
Definitely nowadays, people kind of have to be able to do everything, don't you? You sort of have to be the writer and the singer and the producer. It's much more all-inclusive.
Yeah, but it wasn't available to do that in those days. Having computers was such an unbelievable advancement with technology and how to record your music. You couldn't do that in those days. On Physical, for example, I saved up and I saved up and I got a 4-track tape recorder. And that was it. That was as far as technology could go. You could only record 4 things. So you do a guitar and sing or something at the same time. Or you'd have to do it all and think about how it was going to be, because you only had 4 takes. Now you can do, you know, 100 takes of something and add more parts and make it sound like a record.
Steve Kipner there, one of the writers of Olivia Newton-John's Physical, which was recorded 40 years ago now. We will be back talking to Steve very shortly about some of his other big hits. But before that, some music, I think. And what else could I play, really, except for the hit that started it all? Before we play Olivia, though, got a special exclusive for you here. This is the demo that Steve mentioned of his 4-track tape that he recorded 40 years ago as the original Physical.
Oh.
I mean, it really doesn't sound that different. Obviously, the vocals. but, you know, the production is so similar. That is all done on a four-track tape recorder. Can you believe it? Absolutely incredible. I think it's about time we play Olivia Newton-John, though, from that incredible demo that Steve recorded 40 years ago, just from hearing it through a wall in a record label, as he mentioned earlier. Before you know it, we had this. As I say, we will be back talking to Steve very shortly, but for now, physical, this is Olivia Newton-John.
Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Until it's gone. you learn to live with it.
Chicago, Hard Habit to Break. Another one written by the lovely guest we have on today, Steve Kipner. Going to go back to that interview now, which I recorded a few days ago with Steve, specifically to a story about writing that very song, and what a crazy story it is.
I was up in the mountains. It was with my wife, 2 hours from LA. There's a place called Big Bear, and it was up in the snow, and we were just having a little weekend away, and it was snowing, and there was no cell phones in those days. And there was a knock on the door from the manager, who was annoyed that he'd had to come through the snow and the cold to tell us there was a phone call. The manager wouldn't let me use the phone in his place. So Lizzie and I had to get in the car, drive through the snow to a 7-Eleven, and there was a phone box outside. So I had to stand outside in the snow, call this guy and saying, what's the emergency? Why do you need to talk to me? And it was a guy called David Foster, who was the producer. And he said, well, first of all, we're recording with Chicago, Hard Habit to Break. And I went, fantastic. And then he said, but I've added an extra verse, because there was only 3 verses on the demo that I'd done. And now he'd added a new one. Said, fantastic. Thank you so much. I'll get to it first thing Monday when I get back to LA. He said, no, I don't think you understand. It needs to be done now. We're in the studio now.
We've got to the fourth verse and we need the lyrics.
So yeah. I literally sat in the car with my wife.
Amazing.
And she was getting coffee and from the inside the 7-Eleven and coming back, and we were sitting there thinking, what can we say here? And I'm also then having to go back and call my songwriting partner, John Parker, you know, let's figure out the lyrics now. And as I got one or two lines, I'd call David Foster back and tell him those two lines, and they would sing it then. They literally sang it on the spot. And then they'd have to sit there and wait for me to bring him back with the next couple of lines.
Amazing.
And the truth is, my wife, Lizzie, actually came up with one of the lines. She said, two people together but living alone, which is in there. So I said, that's it. I'll call it David, two people together but living alone. They sang it. He played it back. Good. What's the next line? And we just had to sit there till it was finished.
I think that's amazing. I feel like that really changes the way you hear the song. It just makes it even better than it already is when you hear it and you just go, that whole fourth verse was written in the torrential snow in the middle of nowhere. That's just amazing. It's such a good story.
It literally was.
Amazing. Another big change, of course, is how we get our music now, which I wanted your thoughts on. So, you know, Apple and iTunes coming out, and then obviously now streaming and Spotify. Do you think those developments save the industry, or is it killing the industry? Because people have very different views on it.
Well, technology, you know, before there was cell phones, everyone had to stop and make those calls from a phone box out in the snow. If I had a cell phone, I could have just sat in my room and done this. Technology is an amazing thing, and I love the fact that things change, and the fact that we can hear any song I want in the world ever written, I can just type it into Spotify or something and hear it instantly, which is incredible. The bad side about that, and I don't think it's a bad side, it's just that the days of when I would sit down and listen to Beatle albums, for example, there'd be a track that I'd like, and it was too much trouble to pick up the record needle and skip track or whatever. So you'd end up listening to it because it was too much trouble to change it. Then you get to love that song much more than I ever planned to. So what happens is today, people really only do get to hear the songs that they want to hear, and they don't get to hear a lot of the other songs in between where you have a chance. Because if you listen, there are so many songs, you can listen to one and love it, and then you never even get to hear the song that's next to it.
Yeah, I have to say, it's been ages since I've listened to a whole album. And yeah, that is a shame.
I miss that because there's a lot of great things. So what happens is then everybody now, and rightly so, want to have songs that really make an impact. So there are no album tracks. You know, there are those songs that never meant to be a hit in your face single.
Yeah.
You just don't get to hear those things. But there are other benefits of the ease of it and the convenience. So that's incredible.
Yeah, exactly.
I think way things change is incredible. You just got to go with it because you're certainly not going to change technology.
Yeah, you're not going to stop it, are you?
No.
Of course, with all the streaming and stuff, we also don't really have records and CDs much anymore, which means we don't have the sleeves. I've heard it said before that, you know, that sort of becomes like a CV or a business card for people in the business around the artist.
Absolutely. What used to happen when you would listen to, you buy your favorite album and you're really excited that it's coming out, and you'd have to wait, you know, it's coming out next week, and oh, wow, I can't believe I have to wait 6 days. And it finally comes out. Anything that was written on the album cover, you would read it like 50 times. That's how you knew who played on it, you know, who was the bass player.
Yeah.
What's the story here in this picture? And you really like devoured it. Now it's like images and you just see so many things, so disposable, you don't even really think too much about it. So you've lost a visual side of things too now. You really just have the audio. But the audio is also incredible. It's so convenient. I remember you'd have like these Sony Walkmans and things like that. You'd feel really proud of yourself because you could have like 6 or 7 songs and walk around and be mobile with it. And now you can have every song in the world at your device when you're out in the country on your phone. So it's amazing.
Yeah, it is incredible. I also wanted to ask you, if you had to list your top 3 songs you've written that you're like most proud of, what would they be?
Honestly, I've thought about that a lot. I don't write songs to try and sell anymore, but I'm in the studio pretty much every day, but I'm just happy just doing music because that's what I've done all my life. when I'm working on a song, that's my favorite song because that's getting all my attention. It's like your kids. And, you know, you can't say, what's your favorite kid? I really, there are songs, of course, that I like more than others. And there are songs that were bigger hits than others. But that just because it was a big hit doesn't mean it was my favorite song.
Yeah.
Or it could be. You know, there are some songs that I am actually proud of, like when Stole, Kelly Rowland, when that came about, that was never meant to be a single. I never even imagined it would. I think there'd been some terrible shooting in America, and that was just on the news and stuff. And we just wrote a song that obviously was a very depressing subject. And I never thought it would be a single. But when it did become a single, I was really proud of that song in the fact that I felt it had another message to it.
Yeah, resonated with people.
And one of my other favorite songs, and this goes against what I just said, it actually never got recorded, and it was called It's Not All About Me. And I love that song. And it was supposed to be recorded, but some artists put it on hold, and then they had it on hold for a year, and then they got dropped from the record label.
Oh, no.
But it was a really good song because it had some meaning to it. But when I would write songs, when I do write songs, I always have to believe it. If I can't believe it, then I'd think, if I don't believe it, why should anyone else?
Yeah.
And really put my head into the space. Even if it's a song for a girl, I'm in my mind, I'm that person from that point of view, you know, the human part of it. And that's very important that I really believe what I'm writing. Even if it's just a little pop song, I act it out in my head.
It must take quite a good imagination, sense of imagination to do that as well. It must be quite fun. It's like acting, being in all these different positions.
It's exactly acting because you close your eyes and you sing and you are that person in the song.
Yeah.
Because if you're just pretending to be that person, then it doesn't feel real. And then why should anyone else believe it?
Well, that's amazing. And really good tips as well for people that might be listening that want to get into music and stuff. It's a good advice as well, which I hadn't been expecting, about how to write songs, giving away all your secrets.
They're not secrets, it's just how I do.
And, I mean, we haven't even discussed the whole legacy situation yet. Of course, your dad also very big in the industry, and now your son is also in music, an amazing artist, writer in his own right. Do you feel like that's sort of passing the baton on a bit?
So what happened was I grew up around it. That's what my dad did. He, in Australia, he was actually the first guy to actually sign the Bee Gees to a record label and got them their first... And actually produced, but really I think those guys pretty much did it themselves, but he was made the first record they did, Spicks and Specks, became a number one hit in Australia.
Wow.
And then he went on and he had a number one in America with Johnny Mathis and Denise Williams called Too Much, Too Little, Too Late. And so I was always around that. And then I sort of started obviously doing that. And then when my son Harrison... when he went off to college, he wasn't interested in music at all, but he'd always been around me in the studio and it was just like he was always there. But he never showed any signs that this is what he was going to do. When he went to college, we got him a guitar to keep him company if it was lonely or he didn't have any friends, he'd have his guitar, which would be his mate. Hopefully that was the idea. Just didn't want to ever say you should do music.
Yeah.
Because what if he was really meant to be something else? I didn't want to be... I didn't want to influence him to go selfishly into what I did. I wanted him to be happy. And then he ended up coming back from college. Like, I couldn't believe it. There's this guy who plays guitar and sings these songs. And so I don't know how that happened, but it's really good. I love the fact that Harry is doing this and he's doing really good. He's working so hard.
He's got such an incredible voice as well. It's really lovely.
He's just got a new video out on YouTube called Stutter. So if you go at Harrison Kipner and check out Stutter and check it out, I'd like you to hear it too.
Yeah, I think I have heard it actually. It's really good. I think so. I've definitely heard some of his new stuff. It's really cool. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been so great to have you on the show.
Oh, you're lovely. Thank you so much.
We're going to play a load of your records now. So I'm going to line them all up.
I like that.
We are indeed. Steve Kipner there, songwriter and producer. We are going to play one of his songs that he just mentioned, in fact. Travel coming up in a little bit. But first, this is Steel by Kelly Rowland.